Today's podcast is sponsored by Simplified Technology Solutions on the web at simplified-tech.com. Simplified Technology Solutions, also known as STS, is your resource for 8.5 upgrades, Domino on VMware best practices, same time, quicker, connections, and more.
It's time for the Taking Notes podcast with Julian Robichaud and Bruce Elgort.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 105 of the Taking Notes podcast. My name is Bruce Elgort, and I am here with
Julian Robichaud.
And today, Julian, who we spoke with?
Mary Beth Raven and Julie Forgo, who are both involved with user interface and design of the user interface sort at IBM and Lotus, and they both work on Lotus Notes as well as a few other products. And we just talked to them about how the whole user interface and user experience design works and what's involved with that and the various jobs and things that they do and how the whole process works.
Mm-hmm. And you got to realize too that Mary Beth and Julie, they're not coders, right? They and their team actually work with the designers, whether it's through, like Mary Beth says on the podcast, you know, documents with images, or in the past, Mary Beth mentioned editing resource files and so forth. But it's just real interesting how there are, you know, people who really sit and think about all the different, as Mary Beth describes, personas out there that they create who perform or would perform a certain interaction with the software, right, Julian?
Right. Yeah, they're not just sitting in a room with a box of crayons and designing dialogue boxes all day.
That's right.
There's a whole lot more to it than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they actually may be in your office, right, behind a secret wall that you may not know about, filming what you're doing and reporting back to Lotus what you're doing wrong with the software.
They could be doing that right now.
So sit back and enjoy Mary Beth Raven and Julie Forgo.
Okay, here we are with Mary Beth Raven, who is the lead designer for Notes, among other things, and Julie Forgo, who is an information developer at IBM and also will be one of the lab captains at the User Experience or UX Lab at Lotusphere this year. So we're happy to have you guys on the podcast, and I'm going to jump right in with what the heck is a UX person? What does that mean? Mary Beth, would you like to answer that for us?
Sure, I'll start answering and then Julie can jump in. UX, user experience, really stands for a wide array of things that we do at IBM. As you folks probably know, I'm a user experience designer. I focus on interaction design, like order of operations, what are the main tasks that a persona like Philippe or Samantha needs to be able to do with things like mail, calendar, contacts, same time, things like that. We also have people who focus on the visual design aspect. Some of you may have met Denise Shaw at Lotusphere. She worked a great deal on Notes 8. She collaborates with me and the other interaction designers on more things like layout, visuals, quality of icons, things like that. We also have various usability and user research people who specialize in doing various kinds of usability tests or usability evaluations, and you will meet most of that team down here in the UX lab at Lotusphere. And we also, as members of our team, have information developers, information designers, such as Julie, who work on help systems, who work on embedded help, you know, pop-up help, and who help us with writing the error messages and things like that so that we are as clear and succinct as possible.
And I can add to that. As an information developer, I have a particular point of view, which is that although my team is responsible for creating help systems, we really see our role as really contributing to the user experience by trying to figure out how we can help people avoid having to go to the help system. So we really try to put ourselves out of a job by bringing the help to the users in a way that makes it really consumable for them. So we're always looking for feedback from the users about how to help them by bringing more text into the UI, as Mary Beth stated, or using videos to show tasks. So we do a lot of outreach to customers to make sure that we're on the right track.
Okay. Well, Mary Beth, you mentioned something that I think was interesting when we all started learning about Notes 8 and Hanover and the whole Notes client redesign, and it's the concept of personas. And you know, it seems like it was around the Hanover time when at least we people in the outside world started hearing about these personas that you were putting together as part of the user interface experience. How important is that in terms of just sort of the overall design and I guess what it means to develop a user experience in the first place?
I think it's important, and I think it adds an element of fun as well. We used personas for same time way back for like same time 2.5, et cetera, but that was before, you know, blogging and social networking were around, so most of you folks on the outside were not aware of that. So we started out with really engaging customers and business partners in our persona with Notes 8 Hanover, and we are expanding it, and we are using Personae to design connections in quicker and same time now. And we're really trying to make an effort to have a cast of characters who use the whole portfolio, because it helps us to focus on the fact that Philippe not only reads his Notes email, but he's also trying to use same time or trying to do a blog or use a wiki in connections, and you know what the overall experience of the whole portfolio is. And it helps us because we can ask ourselves, you know, well, would Philippe understand this? Or, you know, what would Samantha think if she saw this screen? Would she know what to do next? And I personally think it's helped Dev and QE a lot, because it helps them to think not just about how they would code it or how they would test it, but really how our customers and end users would actually perceive it and use it. And it's also been kind of fun because, you know, we talk about, you know, we give our personas little lives, you know, fantasy lives, and joke about them and have some fun.
Well, and Julie, it sounds like you know, your job is kind of to prevent the personas from ever having to do things like use the help system, if you can help it. Is that right?
Well, that is true. I mean, Mary Beth has been a great evangelist for personas, and it is true. It has really sharpened our focus on putting ourselves in the user's place and saying, okay, what do we need in this role to be successful? And so we definitely see information development as a partner in being a customer advocate and making the software as easy to use as possible. So we're right in there with them.
Well, how is it different for designing for a persona or kind of bringing these fake people in to the design process versus actually having you know, real people sit down in front of a computer and maybe you're watching them through a mirror or something like that, and watching them work? I mean, are those two completely separate things, or is the process actually sort of similar?
This is Mary Beth again. I think the process is very similar. One of the reasons we created personas is because it's actually kind of hard for us to get to those real actual business users. I mean, you know, Bruce, you and Julian are great guys and we love you and all. And all the admins that we work with at customer sites are wonderful people. But you generally actually know too much, or you're too comfortable with a lot of the software, and you're not scared to explore in ways that many of the business users, you know, who are accountants or lawyers or administrative assistants are. So to create these personas, we go out and we interview these real people and we create like a composite character, our persona, based on interviews with the real people. And then as we're sitting around in our IBM cubicles designing, we reference these personas. We got them, you know, their pictures and their write-ups printed out on our cubicle walls to like reread things like what other tools do they use based on these interviews with real people. And then we do usability testing where we bring people into the lab. And one of the things we started to do with Notes 8 that we want to do more of is what we call renovations on the road. Renovations is the fake company that our personas work for. And we take a server on a laptop and a bunch of client laptops out to customer sites and set up in a conference room or two, and we run usability tests at the customer site with some of these actual real people. But they're kind of hard to get at. So on a daily basis, We don't have these, you know, actual real business users wandering our hallways at IBM. And so that's where we use the personas.
Julie and Mary Beth, when do you guys, you know, when does your team get involved in the user experience portion of development or planning?
We get involved earlier and earlier, starting with, well, actually, I don't know if Notes 8 was the first. I have been involved as a designer with evaluating requirements for same time. And then when I moved from same time to work on Notes, we got involved. And one of the very first things I did on the Hanover project, as a matter of fact, was we went through our Lotus Notes requirement database that had over 4,000 feature requests and said which one of these or which of these feature requests fit in what we want to try to do with the new direction of Notes in and stuff like that. So we start right with the requirements gathering. And right now, as we go forward with Notes 8.5.2, et cetera, we have weekly requirements evaluation meetings. We call them the RET meetings, R-E-T. I don't even know what the triage, requirements evaluation triage meetings, where I'm one of a team. We have members of development. We have product management. We have support on these as we go through each week and we look at our requirements for each release and prioritize them and decide which ones need to make it into a release.
And it's more than just Notes, right, Mary Beth?
Yeah, it's more than just Notes. I happen to be on the Notes requirements team. I am not on the same time or connections requirements team. We have other members of the design team who are on those other teams.
But I'm on the connections team, and I have to say it's impressive how design-led the software engineering has become, that it's the designers who take the lead in sort of mapping out the future of the product, and we'll be finishing one release and already very actively engaged in working on the next release. And it's the designer's vision that gets, you know, translated into work items that trickle down to the development group. And it's also so iterative that right from the get-go, everybody is engaged in making constant improvements, testing what we're building. So, you know, always with the goal of just making it a better and better experience.
Mm-hmm. And I have to ask, what exactly do you guys deliver to those development teams? You know, are they mock-ups? Are they Symfony documents? Are they what Photoshop files? What do you deliver to them as far as the user experience?
This is Mary Beth. I'll go first. It depends on who we're working with and what they want, et cetera. I often deliver documents with lots of screenshots, with lots of lists of here are the actual strings that I want in the product, copy them and paste them in. I used to actually own the property file or the .rc file for some things and so that I would actually type it in. But then that's a whole other story, but for other reasons, I don't do that anymore, so other people will check stuff out and I'll tell them what to put in there. And other folks, for example, for connections and things that are more web-based, we have a team of people who actually do all the CSS markup and do a bunch of the page layout in the actual, you know, HTML and CSS and stuff like that. So they're a little bit more hands-on. So it all depends on the product and the design team.
And this is Julie. And, of course, the information comes in many different forms. It can be pure design specs, and those design specs are followed up with conversations with all the stakeholders about implementation details and collecting everyone's feedback. But it's also research presentations. So after we've done a big show like Lotusphere, all of that information that's gathered is then rolled up and presented back to the teams, you know, usually in the form of a fairly formal presentation about this is what we're hearing from customers and these are the key items that people want addressed. So it's sort of all different mediums.
Now when you're doing your testing or sort of getting the informal feature requests or the feedback from people, how important is it to get feedback from people who have never used the product before versus people who use it all the time? You know, maybe Notes users who have been using the product for a while or Connections users and say, you know, here's the new version of the product. Can you still use it? I mean, it seems like that's almost two completely different sets of people. Where you know, people who have used the product before, you know, they have certain expectations as to how things are supposed to work, whereas someone who has never used it before is just a complete blank slate. You know, so do you bring in a lot of people who have never used it before, or is it primarily just old users of the product who you're redesigning for them?
This is Julie, and I'll jump in on this one because I work on Connections, and Connections is still a fairly young product. It's really key that we get feedback from inexperienced or new users, because if they cannot latch on and adopt the software, then we're doomed, right? So so that is generally the target base that we go after. Now, a new user might be a user that's new to Connections. They might have experience with other social software, with other social networking tools, so they may not be new to the concept, but it's very important that we capture their feedback on their initial feelings about the product, because if they get stopped and frustrated, then it's very hard to get that user back into the fold again. So we have a customer base, and we go to them for new features and improvements, but we've always got that new user front and center in mind.
And this is Mary Beth, and I'm sure, as you guys know, with Notes, it's a real delicate balance. Certainly with Notes 8, we wanted to refresh the existing experience for current users, but we also wanted to attract new users and make it easier, quite honestly and frankly, make it easier for the IBM sales force to sell into competitive male situations. So it was a delicate dance, and sometimes we did that dance really well, and sometimes we did it, you know, poorly, and we have to make some choices. For example, I'm sure you're aware of this, right? F9 is refresh in Notes, but the world is kind of used to F5 as refresh in the web browser. And we'd get new users who'd come to Notes and they'd press F5 and they'd get the old fashioned screen lockout and they'd like freak out and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So we had to, you know, make some tough decisions about what to do and stuff like that. So every release, it's a delicate balance. And we've toyed with the idea of saying, okay, this release, we're going to focus on, you know, making it better for existing customers. But quite honestly, sales never lets us do just that, because of course they're always trying to get new customers. And after all, we do work for a business, and I do want to assist them in increasing our market share. So every release, it's a balance.
Has the team ever experienced, like, when a new feature was added to a product, say Notes, did it ever come back, whether it be good or bad, and surprise you?
I have to think about that. Did it ever come back?
I mean, like you said, Mary Beth, you totally changed the user experience in Note 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe, you know, that's a big general, well, it's a big massive change for the client, right? And obviously we all know, right, based upon feedback from some of the research groups and so forth, that it was a great thing that happened with the user experience in Note 8. But I mean, you guys blog it at notesdesignblog.com, and you're always throwing things out there for us to give you feedback on. And I'm just curious, you know, do you ever take that feedback, throw it out there, right, in a new release or a point release or whatever as a feature, and does it ever come back and say, wow, that's totally not what we expected the reaction to be?
Maybe like when you were going to change all of the view icons?
Ah, well, that one actually.
Thanks, Julian.
That one, I did. To tell you the truth, the story on that one is that I didn't like the proposed view icons that we were proposing, and our constituency who reads the blog did exactly what I was hoping they would do, which is look at them and say, no, you've toned them down too much. They're, you know, we need red icons to help us find things and stuff like that. That one in particular did not surprise me, and I was able to use your feedback to go back to the higher-ups who wanted to mute everything down and say, no, our constituency says we need to make it brighter in that case. But there was one in particular, and I don't remember the exact context of the the details, but it had to do with calendar, and it was a blog posting that John Lance made, and it was about something, what do you want to do here, there? Oh, I think it was like, I don't know, multiple signatures. I can't even remember what it was. And it came back that people basically said, that's not really that important to us compared to this other thing. And so he went back at the requirements level and said, instead of doing thing A, it seems like it's really more important to do thing B. So let's do thing B.
You know, I couldn't imagine developing a product with so much legacy, you know, trying to bring that forward. You know, that must be such a hard job for your team to do, right? Because you have to support everything we've all ever built, right? As far as the user, as far as UI and all that other kind of stuff, as far as, you know, features and trying to add stuff, you know, try to move the existing base forward as well as bring in new, you know, users to the product lines. That's got to be one tough job.
I think it is. And on some days I kind of go, oh, you know, working with all this legacy thing is just so hard. I wish I was, you know, starting at a brand new, you know, I'll be honest. I'll say, well, gee, you know, geez, it would be so much fun to work at Google. They have like no legacy, right? And then I kind of go, given my personality, I'm the kind of person who likes that kind of a challenge. It makes it more interesting to me. So while it is tough, I enjoy the challenge, except for when it's excruciatingly painful because of our legacy that I end up getting stuck between a rock and a hard place, which happens once in a while.
That sounds like maybe a Twitter post.
Yeah, and then everybody would wonder, yeah, what are the details? Yeah,
stuck between a rock and a user interface design.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, how about something like something that would be considered a disruptive change? You know, something where it's you have existing functionality, and you say, you know what, we're just going to totally change that aspect of the user experience. And Julie, maybe you've experienced this a lot with connections. Since it's kind of a young product, and you're probably a little more free to make disruptive changes. You know, with something like that, how do you make that call as to whether you're just going to completely scrap something old and put some kind of new design on? Is that just a judgment call, and you say, well, you know, we need to do it, or are there metrics that you use? How does that work?
Well, fortunately, it's not my job to make calls on that level, yay. But I do see the benefit of being part of a product group that is still young enough to be pretty nimble in terms of responding to customer requirements and adapting to the market. We don't have a ton of legacy that we are married to, and so things do tend to still change pretty swiftly in connections, which can be freeing. If you see a room for improvement, you don't have to think about, you know, a million applications that are going to be disrupted. So we do try to still stick with moving in the general direction of making the social networking suite as comprehensive and integrated and helpful as possible. But sometimes the changes that we think are helpful, you know, as you say, we get back a little surprise, and that's kind of the fun of the user experience testing is you really never know how a customer is going to react to something that you don't think is objectionable. We just did a test and had a customer say that he was a big fan of communities, but had no idea why we wanted to plunk a blog in the middle of a community, because he considered a community a shared forum, and he thought of a blog as a one-way street. And so what the heck were we doing, you know, gumming up the works with something like a blog? So it's really great. You get a completely different perspective that never would have occurred to me. And then you have to step back and think about this and say, well, you know, what does that opinion represent? Is this just somebody who has a particularly strong opinion about a pet peeve, or is he onto something? And we weren't really thinking about this in the right way. So it creates a lot of interesting discussions.
And I have a very different example, actually. It has to do with icons in the inbox. In 8.5, we changed the icons in the inbox because we had been receiving feedback that the new icons that we'd put in Notes 8 were hard to distinguish. People had trouble finding new calendar invitations and things like that. And so we decided, okay, we have to be very rigorous about this because we were not rigorous enough when we changed them in Notes 8. So we had a bunch of people who did a whole bunch of work. I did not do most of the work on this study, but John Lance put together a prototype, and our user usability people, researchers Sherry Branco, Betsy Comstock, who was fortunate enough to retire recently, and a bunch of other people did some very rigorous response time testing. We tested at least five different versions of the icons where our participants were brought in and they were timed how long it took them. They'd be like, okay, so look at the top message in your inbox, find the next unread mail and click on it, find the next calendar invitation and click on it, and things like that. And we timed them, and then we gave them opinion questionnaire kind of things of which of the five versions of icons did they like better. And we, you know, ran all the student t-tests and the analysis of variance, et cetera, and came up with the current set of icons that you see in 8, 5, and beyond.
Do you often find kind of a discrepancy between what people say they want and what they actually want?
Sometimes. For example, in this particular study, the case where one of the things we were testing is whether or not to put an icon next to a message once you have read it. As I'm sure you're aware, in the past, Notes, 5, 6, 7, once you read a mail message, we took away the red star in the gutter column over in the left. One of the things we introduced in Notes 8 that we have now taken away again is in Notes 8, we had an icon for a message that was unread, and then we changed it to a different icon once you had opened it up. At the time, we did that because many other mail programs do that, and it seemed to be a logical thing to do that people expected, that is, people that we were trying to attract from other mail systems. In practice, our Notes install base, our constituents, were used to using no icon at all as very useful information. And so that kind of sidetracked them. And in our testing, there was no significant difference in the time it took to locate the next unread message or the next calendar entry when we had an icon for a message that you'd already read compared to when we removed the icon. But in the preference surveys, and we tested not just Notes users, we tested people who use Gmail, people who use Outlook, people who use Outlet Web Access. They all preferred not having the icon, even though there was no statistical significant difference. So we decided that since everybody tells us that's what they prefer and there's no statistically significant difference, we're going to take the icon away.
Yeah, and that's kind of what my question was leading to earlier. That was a great example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, I come at it from, as a programmer, I run into that all the time. You know, people come to me and say, well, I want you to design this as a program. And a lot of times there's a difference between what they say they want the program to do and what they actually need for it to do.
Well, they don't know you're an hourly kind of guy, Julian.
That's true. Hey, I'll write both. but you know, I don't really have any way of doing metrics kind of like you guys do. I mean, you've got these user experience labs, and you have these kind of I always sort of envision like the security camera in the wall, and someone sitting in a room all by themselves with a computer, and you're standing behind a mirror in a lab coat taking notes. I rarely get to do that.
IBM does not provide us with lab coats.
Oh, okay. So is that actually what happens? I mean, do you stand behind a two-way mirror and sort of watch people and write things down on a clipboard?
In some cases, yes. Actually, we do have a usability lab with that kind of setup. We take notes on our computers, though, not on clipboards. And we can record it and all that kind of stuff to then show clips to the engineers or, you know, vice presidents or whatever about what's going on. Lately, we've been doing a little bit less of that kind of testing, although that icon test I mentioned was pretty rigorous. We've been doing more in situ or in context testing, where we take stuff right to people's cubicles or wherever it is that they'll work, because there are other aspects of real life that may impinge that help us to understand what it's like to use our software. You know, like they're sitting in a cubicle and it's very noisy, or you know, they're trying to use, you know, notes on an iPhone while sitting in a cab in traffic in New York. And, you know, maybe the colors we're using are hard to see because it's bright and sunny, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'd like to see you in the backseat of a cab looking over someone's shoulder while the cab.
You may see that. You may see the trunk cam.
Yeah. Mm. Right. Well, that's
We're very aggressive in you know, extracting feedback from whatever venue we can get it. At the bottom of every help topic, we have a feedback link so that users can send an immediate entry into a database saying that they couldn't find something they needed or they're struggling with a particular feature. So we get a tremendous amount of feedback that way. And we do a lot of different sort of non-traditional types of outreach. We worked with a classroom in Germany that was learning some IBM software, and we went directly to them and did a kind of a group usability project where we ran them through some paces and got some feedback. So I think what users don't know is that they have tremendous power to influence the future of a design just by speaking up. And I hope that will become more apparent as we move toward more community-based type of information dissemination and gathering. For example, if people use wikis, they can not only contribute to the technical content, but it's just a great way to make their voices heard on how they feel about the software that they're using.
Hey, just out of curiosity, is there a special user experience word for the word user? Or are you allowed to call people users, or is that like a nasty term?
We love our users. We don't think user is a four-letter word, but in a good way.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we were using the right nomenclature here. Well, you know, the stuff we were just talking about, that kind of leads right into Lotusphere, too, because now, Julie, you are one of the team captains, captains.
Yes, I am. I helped get the UX lab set up and ready to go for the show, and then I dutifully man the front desk and welcome our users and let them know that, you know, we need you to put the user in user experience, get them hooked up with an activity of interest to them, and just try to help things kind of flow along so that we get the benefit of input and they get the benefit of a great experience of working with the software in a very hands-on way, which people really, they really get a lot from that, and we get a lot of comments from people who visit our lab that it's the best thing that they've done at Lotusphere. I don't mind working in that brag. So it's fun. I've been doing the lab captain thing for a few years, and it's a great change of pace from my regular job.
Where is the lab this year, Julie?
Asia 4. We're in a large room right on the main drag in the Dolphin Hotel, right next to the Meet the Developers lab. And we are open for all the days of the show, starting from right after the general session until we close middle of the day on Thursday. And people can drop in and get matched up with an available activity, or we provide a whole list of activities that we're testing in the lab so they can scan that. And if there's something that they're particularly interested in, they can set up a time slot later in the week at the show. And we even make it possible for people to book a slot in advance. And people can feel free to email me directly, and I can set that up if they have a burning desire to see something.
Now, what's the setup of the user experience lab? Are you going to have like a New York taxi cab with a hidden camera and someone using an iPhone, or is it desks or a classroom, or what is it?
We're a very comfortable lab where we're set up. There's sort of a lounge area in the middle where people can kick back if they're waiting to meet with a designer or to do an activity. And then we have a series of stations all around the room, just very casual stations at tables where you're most likely going to just sit down and do a one-on-one session with a designer or a user experience specialist or an information developer. And most of the activities run about 30 minutes long, and you'll be asked to step through a series of tasks and pretty much just give your reaction feedback. You could be looking at an existing product. You could be getting a sneak preview of a possible future design, a possible future technology. So there's really something for everyone. There, we try to make activities available so that they appeal to all different types of users, not just administrators, not just developers. We have things for new users. And for people who just want a break from the show, we also have some self-directed activities that tend to be a little bit briefer, that they can just step through those and fill out a quick survey or enter some responses. Hmm. So we honestly have something for everyone.
I remember visiting the lab last year, and I believe, I don't know if you were there, Julian, maybe it was someone else, but we sat down with Craig Lorden, I believe, and we mm-hmm. went over the new product wikis and so forth. Who are some of the other people? You know, is Craig going to be back? I mean, who mans, right, the lab?
Yes, Craig will be back. He's part of my team, part of the information developers, and they are an interesting group. There will be about four or five from the information development team. And what's neat about them is they're not so product-centered. So somebody might not come bursting into the lab and say, you know, I've just seen a demo of, you know, of Quikr, and I simply must get my hands on it. But there might not be, they might not come rushing in and say, show me a wiki or I'll just kill myself. But if we guide customers to that area, there's a tremendous amount that cuts across the board, setting up wikis to do community documentation. We have this, we have a great activity on user-directed learning where learning modules can be installed as a widget on as part of a product interface, which is tremendously appealing as companies look for, you know, more efficient and more cost-effective ways to bring training to the desktop. So that's something that's very appealing. And we also are having a return of the activity on Custom Content Assembler, which has been very popular, where you can actually pick and choose pieces of various documentation sets and dynamically build a custom set. So so yes, the ID group is well represented with some really interesting activities. And then, of course, in addition to those, we have just about every product team is represented showing either current or future designs.
Well, you mentioned the possibility of kind of reserving something in advance. So were you actually offering to let people contact you to set up times?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's like a game show. I'm willing to put my email address out there and people can contact me directly and I can help them reserve a slot. Should I just go ahead with my email address?
You can, and then we'll go ahead and put it in the show notes too if you're feeling that brave.
Absolutely, sure. Yeah, it's sorry, it's a little lengthy.
It's not going to be like Mary Beth.
It's not your title, right?
IBM.com. No. Okay.
Julianne_Forgo, Forgo, at us.ibm.com. And if you send me an email, and I can send you back a list of the lab activities, which are also posted in Mary Beth's blogs, and which hopefully we can make available in the podcast notes. If there's something you simply must see and you know you're going to be free at a particular time, then by gosh, we'll get you hooked up.
Mm. Julian, before we move on to more Lotusphere stuff, do you, Mary Beth, I have a question for you. You know, do you live your life in like user experience stuff? So you're walking through the store and you see something that's just not designed the way you would. I mean, does your husband and your family, you drive them crazy?
Yeah, actually, pretty much, yeah. I do. And, for example, I think you see my tweets lately. I got a new BlackBerry Tor, and there are some things about the Tor that I like and some things that I don't like about the design and stuff like that, you know. So, of course, I'm off, you know, emailing the BlackBerry people going, hey, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Things like that. And one of my favorite things to do, speaking of, you know, things like usability tests in cabs and things like that, is, you know, when you're on an airplane, you're kind of stuck with nothing else to do, right? So I walk up and down the aisles and I see who's using Lotus Notes. And I try to actually strike up a conversation and see what they use in Notes and what they like or what they dislike, you know. And I'm sure some people are rolling their eyes thinking the last thing in the world they want is this crazy nutcase woman bothering them. But on the other hand, you know, it's like that's real world. Our users use Lotus Notes on airplanes, and this is a, you know, a great opportunity to learn something about what they like and don't like.
Yeah, I think I just read, though, in the new TSA rules that you're, specifically you're not allowed to talk about Lotus Notes during the last hour of flight. So,
right.
I think okay. they just put you on a do not fly list, Mary Beth.
Yeah.
The creepy usability lady.
Now to drive to Lotus Field.
Okay, so I'm just kind of picturing Mary Beth walking around muttering, oh, this is stupid. This is stupid all day, like walking through grocery stores and things. all right, well, I guess back to Lotusphere. Julie, do we miss anything? Anything else you want to tell our fine listeners about?
Actually, there are a couple of special activities that we do on Monday afternoon because it tends to be a little bit quiet in the lab on Monday while people are attending the general session, and then they're all fired up to go to sessions and their brains aren't completely full, so they haven't wandered in to see what's shaking in the lab. So we do a couple of fun things I did want people to know about. One is a Mary Beth idea, where if you are visiting the conference and maybe you've brought your spouse, your partner, a friend to tag along, if they're curious about life at a Lotus conference, we welcome them to come into the lab and do an activity. As we talked about before, we love to get new users in, so no experience is required, and we'd be happy to match them with a half an hour activity and give them a taste of what their friend, partner, or loved one is sort of involved with. So that's one thing we do. It's kind of the Bring a Friend program, and they just need to stop by the registration desk and get hooked up with a badge so they can come into the lab. And another thing that we do is we have designers who have volunteered to do design reviews. So if folks have Lotus applications that they're working on and they'd like to have a seasoned UX person run an eye over their interface and offer some suggestions, they can do that on Monday afternoon only, and get some expert feedback. So that's kind of a nice way that we show our appreciation for our customers and also give them exposure to what's happening in the lab.
Wow. Now, Mary Beth, are you going to be in the lab too, or are you just completely separate from this whole lab thing? Are you going to be handing out pins that say, come help us put the U in user?
Almost, yes.
No.
Heard we're listening, I think, is what we're actually going to hand out pin-wise. Yeah, I'll be in the lab most. I'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm busy on Monday, but definitely I have some specific things I want to test called Click to Cloud, ideas and user interface designs of going from an installed client on premises like Notes or Same Time to things in Lotus Live. So I will be there, definitely. And then on Monday, right after the opening general session, Jamie Liu and I are doing our two-hour show and tell session on extending your reach by extending the sidebar. So we are about the sidebar, and then I'm giving some demos in the Notes strategy talk that officially Kevin Kavanaugh and Ed Brill are the people listed as the speakers, but they have roped me in to do the demos. And after that, I'll be in the lab.
All right. And you know, Bruce, I think we should go there and just say hi at least.
Don't yes. we always, though?
Yeah, well, I would hope so.
Yeah, Julie, are you going to be at the Bald event on Saturday? What's the Bald event, you say, Bruce?
Am I invited?
Yes, Bruce.
Yes, well, on Saturday, prior to Lotusphere, a whole bunch of us get together, probably 100 of us, at the Big River Brewery on the boardwalk for a beer or two, or three, or four.
That sounds very tempting. I'll try to mosey by.
All right, Mary Beth has been a guest there. In fact, I think, Jillian, we have Taking Notes podcast pictures with her.
Oh, yes, we do, Bruce.
So,
I sure do.
Well, I guess that's a wrap for episode 105. Julie, thanks for your cameo appearance on the podcast today.
Thank you.
And again, Julie will be in the User Experience Lab. Is it Asia 3?
It's Asia 4.
It's Asia 4. I'm sorry. And Mary Beth, you've been on the podcast before, maybe once or twice or three times, I'm not sure. So thanks again for your time today. And Julian, any parting words of interest for the listeners?
No. I am just so busy with Lotusphere stuff right now, you can't imagine, Bruce.
Okay. Well, that's a wrap. We'll talk to everyone real soon. Lotus Fear, January 17th. See you then.
See you in Orlando. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Simplified Technology Solutions on the web at simplified-tech.com. Simplified Technology Solutions, also known as STS, is your resource for 8.5 upgrades, domino on VMware best practices, same time, quicker, connections, and more.